All right. Anyone have anything specific that you've highlighted, wanna share with the group, wanna read out, wanna comment on in the first 20 pages that we were gonna read this week? For me, the dedication was pretty cool, where Helen says, "You can do it, and you would not be reading this if you were not already called." Isn't that pretty cool? That's pretty powerful. I always feel that with Helen when she's talking to us, talking to the self, she's assuring us that success is guaranteed, right? It's completely breaking through that bit of resistance, at least in my case, which was like, this is going to be too hard. This is going to be too much. I won't be able to do it. And she's like, you're already here. It's already happening in front of you. And you can't stop it anymore, which is so powerful coming from her. So, yeah, I spent some time staring at the dedication page and feeling so happy about it. Also, in the introduction, on the same token, right, where she says, it's one thing to see what you are, and it's another thing altogether to fully dedicate your life to your total awakening. Few are the ones that have walked all the way to the end of the road, and this is due to many factors which we will look into. So it's really a call for arms, so to speak, and you feel that motivation in her words that it can be done. And here's a manual for that. Pretty beautiful. As part of lesson one in the GP, we are, as a group, very familiar with these chapters, right? This is something that we go again over again and again. So it's nice to be able to read it and absorb it one more time. As Helen says, repetition is key, right? It's repeating those things again and again till the self is familiar with that. And then suddenly it simply becomes it. It acts on it and it becomes it completely.
Anish, I have a comment.
Please, Linda, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. I was looking for my raised hand. On page three, I just like that there's, in the middle of page three, there's just like four little mini contemplations right there where you just go right into a practice. It's not an explanation. It's just, how many times a day do you stop to look at what is looking at your thoughts? And just read it, and then do a little 1 minute just pause. And then, she's got several, how many times a day do you listen to your listening? And just put those on sticky notes and put them, sometimes I put them in my car, like right on the steering wheel, so that when I get in the car, I see it. Because that's always a moment where there's sort of nothing going on, just for that moment. You step into your car, the garage door goes up, and you haven't started the car yet. And there's that maybe 1 minute that you could just look at a little idea, a little reminder, and just play with it. So I just like those little four, or that, I guess she's got like, four examples there, just tiny little contemplations. That's all.
Thank you, Linda. And Helen talks about using all of your free time, right? Any time that you have, doing groceries, like you said, driving around, make it your highest priority. So yeah, it's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. And there's a whole lot of those questions in this book, right? That take you to the stateless state, the state of no mind, and make you stop and not think. and be completely open. So it's definitely appreciated. It's very beautiful. On page four, we also have, and Helen is big on that, right? Having habits, the right habits. And she talks about how we typically value phenomena above that which they arise in. So we are basically turning around that habit and the habit of putting all our attention on what comes and goes. And we typically don't give attention to that which is eternal. And we're gradually, through this process, through this book, turning around these habits by redirecting our attention back to the noumenon again and again until it becomes the predominant habit. It's as simple as that, she says. In the notes, as well as on page six, where Helen describes the ego, she says that the ego is not to be judged as wrong or to be alienated in any way, even though it seems to be the cause of our suffering. True understanding of what the ego is will immediately begin to dissolve it. Then we can see it no longer as an enemy to be defeated, but simply the animalistic part of ourselves that allowed us to survive up until this point. Just like the software program on a computer that is now in need of an upgrade, we can see the sense of being separate. Someone served us for a while, but now we are ready to upgrade. On page seven, in the end, it talks about how the ego can never be satisfied. And then on page eight, the first paragraph, in the middle, nothing can satisfy this void because it is the result of the false belief in being a someone located inside a body and vulnerable to poverty, disease, adversity, and an eventual end when the body dies. And then in the middle, towards the end of the next paragraph, at some point you encounter a true teacher or teaching, and you begin to see that perhaps all that was ever wrong was that you had mistakenly identified yourself as something that comes and goes, a body and a mind. Now you have drawn to you the means to turn around this belief and to begin to let go of it. And on the next page, how do we dissolve the ego? It is simply a collection of very familiar thoughts mixed with attention and investment of belief that they are mine or me. This collective bundle of beliefs about life, ourselves, the world, God, the universe, is what we take ourselves to be and needs constant reinforcement all the time. It was the middle of the page. It may initially take some effort on our part to stay vigilant as we hold attention on what is true about us and refuse the attention going with the thoughts. attention automatically will go with thoughts if we do not stay observant. So it's essentially she leading us to forming a habit where we take attention from our thoughts and stay with the noumenon whenever we can remember, as much as we can remember. Whenever given the choice, we go to the noumenon instead of being drawn into the thoughts. Lynn?
Yeah, Anish, when you were talking about identifying with as me and mine and I and that sort of thing, sometimes there is that awareness, really, like just now. And that's coming up more and more frequently. And it's funny, in our culture now, there's a big awareness about how people want to be identified, you know, what pronouns. It's a big reflection of just how is everything being perceived? Is it me or is it just perception? Yeah.
It's a beautiful sharing, Lynn. As a practice, we could all perhaps, you know, spend some time reflecting on whenever we use the word mine or me, right? And dropping that word and seeing what happens. We see my thoughts or my pain, my discomfort, my money, my relationships, my body, my enlightenment. Linda, please.
I just had a funny thought listening to what Lynn said. And by the way, happy birthday, Lynn. I just thought, you know, it's mostly younger people that are calling themselves they and us, and they don't have the pronouns. And I think it's a little bit odd, but I just had this thought that, like, what if they are super enlightened? And they're showing us that there's no I, there's no man, woman, there's no distinction. And like they are teaching us that it really doesn't matter what you call yourself. And so why not just pick a they and say, I'm they. It's just the way my mind works. I think of little silly things that that make it real.
My daughter is 30, and when she was around 4 or 5, it came into our culture that there's this whole new generation of young people, and they're really ultra sensitive, and you know, and now they're young adults and they're identifying as they, and yeah, totally different consciousness, really. So to me, that's heartening. Yeah,
it's a kind of a strange thing, but it's interesting. It's almost like they're just saying, let's just get rid of the pronouns. Who cares?
And that's what the teaching is saying, too.
Yeah, exactly. It is reflecting. They're a reflection of Helen's teachings, you know, in coming in another door.
And it's a cultural thing, really, you know, gaining momentum.
Yeah.
There's a word in Sanskrit which is yoga bhrashta, meaning advanced yogis who are coming back to life just to complete that final step. And supposedly all of these young kids these days who seem very advanced, right? Speaking to what Linda was saying earlier, they're just probably here for just that last bit, maybe, which is why they're not comfortable with those other pronouns that we used earlier. So heartening, definitely. Brian, please.
I've heard, and probably you've all also heard, very, very young children, they will speak about themselves in the third person. Mm. And so they're aware of being something before they identify with being, you know, who they're being called and who they're supposed, well, in the world, supposed to think of themselves as. So for me, that's a brilliant reminder of who we are. Although when I did ask Helen about, you know, babies being, you know, already being in awareness, she pointed out that, yes, that's true, and they aren't conscious of it. So they're aware without being conscious of it. So that's an interesting thing to contemplate. You know, we can be aware but not conscious, and we can also be conscious but not aware. But anyway, this, I think this teaching is meant to help us be both simultaneously.
Sharon, please.
Hi. So that's really awesome, Brian, in terms of like you sharing that piece of, you know, children not being conscious. So a lot of my actual professional work is I work with young children, trauma and attachment and all that kind of stuff. So understanding kind of the brain development and then how it's in theta at that point where it's all just receiving, right? Programming is happening at that stage. So when I always integrate what I do professionally with what comes forward here. So that just kind of tweaked something within me and that sense of, you know, then when we become conscious of it, that's when we have our conditioned understanding of stuff. And I don't know, I still go back to, like, I get the idea of the teaching there, but I really sit back into that idea of the child that is not conscious of it, meaning not almost tainted by the ideas of the mind and the conditioning of all those people around us that put their own stuff or whatever on us. And it's almost like a going back to that complete, when we talk about dropping, it's like dropping all that back to this place where we can never know it through our mind. But that whole, like, almost like a, if there's a goal of not being conscious, in that's really the way to experience this, if there's an experience to have. But anyway, I know I'm just getting tangled up in words, but I really just, it just kind of went like that. That's it. And when you hear kids speaking, like, it's in terms of that third person, which I even see when Linda, when you were saying about the they, like the pronouns and that, and it's still an identity. Like, it's still existing as an identity, but when a child's kind of in third person, they're recognizing that they're not that identity. So it's even bigger than that. So anyway, that was just what you inspired to come out there for me. Thank you.
Anish, can I speak? I have a memory of being very small and watching my mother disappear into herself. Because she was thinking about something, she'd got caught up in thoughts. And that left me feeling desperate because I'd lost her, she'd disappeared. I mean, physically she was still there, but what I wanted wasn't there. And I attracted her attention and she was quite cross with me for bringing me out of where she had been. But I realized that in order to be a human being, that was where I needed to go. I needed to leave where I was and go into what it was that she was doing, because I had my L plates on. I was only tiny, and what I needed was to become like her. So That's a very strong memory for me. That's me.
Thank you, Silvia. Linda?
I was looking at page 9, and it talks about the ego in the second paragraph. And it says the egoic sense of being a separate someone needs an enormous amount of energy to be fed to it constantly. And this has been happening for so long that you've forgotten just how much. And Helen has talked about this a little bit, but I think that it's just like there's so much energy condensing down with thoughts and beliefs and shoulds and shouldn'ts and feelings and labels and constructs that there's just so much tension. And I just love that she put it in the book, just, okay, that's what's been happening most of your life and you're really not aware of it. It's just there. So to begin to dissolve it would free up such incredible energy. And I don't know what that would feel like. I don't know, maybe I have some of that, but it would just be so freeing. I just wanted to share that.
It's beautiful, Linda. You know, sometimes when we are so lost in activity, and Helen talks about it, right? If you're creating some art or, you know, enjoying even a movie, for example, and you completely lose your sense of separate self, it does feel like complete openness, right? It's the exact opposite of what you mentioned, right? The condensing down. So I think we have had glimpses of that, but consciously living as that 24/7 would be an interesting experience. Yeah. Anyone else wanting to jump in? Sharon?
Yeah, hi. So what my thoughts are about that dissolving and seeing it differently. So I find it challenging doing the dissolving the ego part when you've kind of gone through everything. And it's like these earlier stages feel like they've been experienced in a different way already. So it's hard. So I always feel like I'm jumping to 4. So I just kind of put that in mind, but it feels like it's not dissolving at all. It just feels like it is being experienced, not as the leader of our existence anymore, but everything is still there. It's just not having the same value and importance that we assigned to it. So that that's why I kind of keep bumping up against this earlier stuff with me that doesn't, it feels conditioned. Like it feels in duality even. The teaching feels very much in duality to me. So I just need to voice that sense of that it's still there, and thinking it anything other puts it in separation. So anyway, that was just wanting to voice that experience.
Thank you. Pardon?
Yeah, can you hear me? Yeah. So what came up for me after reading this and through pondering is that there is only one ego appearing as many. So when I dissolve my ego, or when me as the ego is dissolved, then all the other egos out there will also dissolve from my point of view, or in this reality that I'm experiencing. Whereas if I have a very strong ego, then I will see lots of egos out there, because what's out there, it's being reflected by how I feel and how I view myself. So just wanted to put that in there.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. It's like when we read some books by the saints, they say that when they get quote unquote enlightened, they find everyone else enlightened as well, meaning not having an ego at all. So it's in line with what has been reported by people who've experienced that. Thank you for sharing. Lynn?
Thought just came that ego really, that everything is just vibrational, and that ego is lower vibration, that's just resonating, you know, and when we don't identify with that lower vibration, then we're in awareness, or we are awareness anyway, but those lower vibrations lower us, lower, you know, our vibrations. I don't know, it just came real powerfully that ego isn't an object, it's a low vibration.
Anyone else wants to share? Staying on page 9, I like this bit about we must simply keep attention on the noumenon, is the second last paragraph. By using one of the practices in stage 1, we can then allow the egoic sense of me to dissolve, just like an old ruined building will immediately begin to collapse if we stop running around constantly propping it. Like Linda mentioned earlier, right? Constantly giving it energy, it'll automatically just dissolve. What is false falls away once seen to be false, and we need not do anything to make that happen. We are the self, believing ourselves to be the separate sense of self. We must make use of this separate sense of self whilst it is here. And then talks about the contrast, right? The form and the formless. It is in fact the reason for having this complex human brain that is capable of contemplating itself. And this ability is present in no other species except humanity. We must learn to use this sense of self to focus consistently and only on the capital self. We must use the practices in stage 1, 2, and 3 to focus on the true capital T, capital S self, like a laser beam. And this begins to burn away all delusion and illusion about our true nature. Helen then goes on, and I would encourage everyone to read the notes again that we read online last session. but they are on the website, the PDFs that Helen has actually herself created and added on the website. Chapter 3 talks about benefits of this pathway, meaning introducing the ego to the path, ego to the self bit by bit, so that, you know, there is the familiarity with what we really are, the capital S self. And she also talks about dealing with fear, and that we have all the help that we need. Page 13 in the bottom. As you walk the pathway, know that every enlightened sage that has ever walked the planet is with you. Every saint is for you. Every master is beside you. All those that have done it are supporting you in unseen ways, and grace is helping you as you make each step. Know that you do not need to know how to get through the next challenge. Help is here for the asking. It can come in an infinite number of ways. Devote yourself only to truth, to God, to the self. Your heart should beat only to see the truth in everything and everyone you see. Then you will live in the kingdom of heaven. Chapter 4, page 15, in the middle of the first paragraph, she talks about meditation, which is a simple practice of quote unquote no practice. It is a non-doing practice, which means we're not trying to get anywhere, to achieve any particular state or becoming something other than we already are. On the contrary, we begin to tune into what we already are. Our true being is silent, still, aware, awake, and is reading this, is hearing this right now. Page 17, first paragraph, last line. The silent noumenon is always listening, open, aware, and observing in an impartial way. It's very key, impartial way to all that is occurring in it. Relaxing and listening is the way. Knowing it is here and feeling for it is key. You do not need to exert any effort or strain to find the noumenon. It has precisely been this effort that has seemingly hidden it from you. It's really important, that point, to stop straining and efforting. The efforting is taking us away from the silence, from the noumenon, just relaxing into it. And page 18, Helen talks about the difference between the inner and the outer search, and the paragraph above the words in bold. Note that even the inner world of thoughts, feelings, sensations, and emotions is out there to the noumenon. Even that is not the inner. There's no inner and outer. Even the subtle inner world of thoughts, opinions, mind in general, and our sense of self is out there to what we really are. Doesn't it stand to reason that you must be here before you can even notice a thought? And finally, a few notes. I'll just read a few of those in the interest of time, and we can read them by ourselves again. You're not becoming anything with this practice. You are not looking to achieve a particular state. And my favorite, the fourth from the top. You're not trying to leave your body or do any kind of spiritual acrobatics. I love doing that. I wish I could do a lot of that, but you're not trying to do that. So it's good to know. And Sangha, we are ending, we're getting towards the end of our time today. So we need to discuss our homework for this coming week. So since we're on the DTE, is everyone okay with reading the next four chapters, meaning chapter 5, 6, 7, and 8? Including chapter 8, would that be okay with everyone? About the same pace as what we had this week. If it gets too much, then we can slow down in the weeks that follow. But for DT, let's aim for four more chapters of fun. And in the Gita, we did the introduction. We got till page 70. how about we do first three chapters of the Gita, chapter 1, 2, and 3. That'll take us to page 110, just before chapter 4. So the first three chapters, the third chapter begins at page 99, including that as well. Is that okay with everyone? Three chapters, the first three? It's going to be a lot of fun. So we that'll be a good pace. All of this we'll upload on the website, including the homework. And I guess if anyone has anything to say, this would be the time to jump in before we quit for the day.
Thank you, Anish. This is so enjoyable. I am really loving it. All of it is just fantastic. The sharings and you're leading us through. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. It's all a collective. So I'm glad we all are able to get together and do this together. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much, Anish, and everyone.
Everyone.
Thank you.
Have a good Sunday.
Thank
you. Stay in touch. Bye bye.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Anish.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.